Welcome to Episode 7 of Practical Defense, The Use of Force Ladder. Welcome back to another episode of Practical Defense. I'm your host, Alex Haddocks. In this episode, we are covering an absolutely critical topic for anyone who finds himself or herself in a confrontation. It's the use of force ladder. And by what I mean by this is the type of force, either verbal or physical, that you can use in a confrontation. And a confrontation can be anything from a drunkard yelling at you from across the street to someone holding a knife to your belly, or even four guys trying to beat the snot out of you. Now, before we start getting into it, I need to make a few disclaimers. No real surprise there. First, I am not an attorney. And what I'm providing here is information that has been made available to me through my training in reality-based personal protection. And these are guidelines intended to help keep you out of trouble. But nothing is ever 100% and nothing is ever guaranteed. Every situation is different with its own special set of circumstances. And when it comes down to the split-second decisions that you need to make, you're using your own judgment and you're making your own choices. And what I hope to achieve here is to provide something of a set of alternatives and perhaps broaden your understanding of the possible repercussions of your actions. I also want to state that all my references here are for the United States, which is where all my experiences is in this area. And I say that because I know we have some listeners outside of the United States, and the use of force laws and regulations can vary greatly from country to country. So, if you want or need legal advice, seek out an attorney. If you want to do some personal research, I can recommend some great places to start. And the first one is a book by Jim Wagner called Reality-Based Personal Protection. And in the book, he has a section on the use of force ladder. And this is the same material that he certified me in and that I teach in my classes and he teaches in his classes. And he built this from all the years he spent as a police officer and all his years in his military experience, and he put all the information together into a very easy, consumable little package. Another great resource is a DVD called The Judicious Use of Lethal Force by Masad Ayoub. This focuses mostly on when it's legal to shoot someone, but the foundation that he lays applies to pretty much any confrontational situation. Another great DVD resource is a series called The Law and Martial Arts by Carl Brown. And this is a 5-DVD series where Mr. Brown, who is an attorney, discusses numerous cases of martial arts in their defense and what the outcomes of these cases were and why the verdicts went the way that they did. Now, all of these resources are listed in the library section of my website, and that URL is alexhaddocks.com. alexhaddocks.com. And there are other resources that you should take a look at as well, and those are your state laws, and most of which can all be found completely in their entirety online these days. So along those lines, you should also look at your local city and county laws and ordinances, because they can actually be more restrictive than the state laws. And everyone should know, or at least I hope that they do, is that you are legally responsible for your actions. You know, from walking down the street to driving your car, or even, I really hope isn't the case, you know, robbing a liquor store, you are responsible for any action that you knowingly take part in. You know, you choose to get into your car and drive. You choose to walk down the street. And if you choose to do so, you choose to rob a liquor store. And what you do has consequences. That responsibility and those legal consequences carry over into everything that we do, including any verbal or physical confrontation we have with another person. And what people don't often realize is that there is a standard for such confrontations called the use of force continuum. And get this, you will be held to this standard by police and the courts whether you know about it or not. And when I first learned about this, I felt betrayed by my martial arts instructors. Because here I was training for over a decade, how to punch, how to block, how to kick, how to break somebody's arm, how to gouge their eyes, how to snap their necks, how to break their knees, how to break their backs. But they left out the part where they said that if I used it incorrectly, I might go to jail. Holy heck! It was never mentioned. It was never mentioned that here's how to block a punch, you know, here's spin him around, put him in a headlock, snap his neck, you know, but they never mentioned, oh, but if he's just punching you, if you do this, you'll go to jail. That was something that they needed to tell me. That's very, very important. It's like, here's when you can use it, and here's when you should not use it. And for 99% of the martial arts instruction out there, that part is never covered. That's something that you will only find in reality-based protection training. So, to me, coming from a strong martial arts background, that was a rather gaping omission in my training. And by gaping, I mean like gaping the size of a black hole. Now, many martial artists, including my grandmaster, Grandmaster Ed Parker, you know, he liked to quip, and he even has quoted in some of his books, that it's better to be judged by 12 than carried by 6. And what he means by this is that it's better to be alive and to be able to be judged by a jury of 12 of your peers in court rather than carried by 6 pallbearers at your funeral. I don't think it needs to be that black and white, and my understanding is that courts don't see it that way either. So let's start with the situational components that make it legally defensible to defend yourselves physically. There are 3 key elements. And what the attacker must have is the means to harm us. The attacker must have the opportunity to harm us. And the attacker must have the intent to harm us. When you have those 3 elements, the means, the opportunity, and the intent of someone attacking you, then you have the legal right to defend yourself. Now, the police use slightly different words. Instead of means, opportunity, intent, the police say ability, opportunity, and jeopardy. But again, you have to have all 3. And now if you're missing a single component, then you're on shaky legal ground. And as a point of clarification, when I say us, I mean that would be you or someone you're protecting, like a spouse, a girlfriend, or a child. So let's talk about means or ability. Now, this refers to the assailant. Does the assailant have something that can harm you? Is he armed with a gun? Is he armed with a knife? Or is he just going to pummel you with his hands or feet? Can hands and feet be considered weapons? And under certain circumstances, yes, hands and feet can be considered weapons. So the next thing, opportunity. Is this guy in a position to harm us? Is he screaming at us from across the street? Is he in the same room with us? Or is he already in our face? And the last part, the last of the 3, is intent. Intent or jeopardy. Now, does this person intend to hurt us? And this one can be a little tricky at times, especially, you know, after the fact when you've already laid the guy out and you're trying to explain to the nice police officer why you felt this person was intending to hurt you. Sometimes it's obvious. Sometimes the guy screams at the top of his lungs, "I'm going to kick your teeth in," and everyone hears it. Then you're in pretty good ground. But again, it depends upon the situation and the interpretation of a reasonable person. So again, all 3 elements must be in place for us to have a legal standing as a defender. If you don't have all 3, then you can get into some serious legal trouble. Now, here's some examples. If a person is yelling at us, threatening us from across the street and waving a knife, and then we, at our option, decide to cross the street and get closer to him, and we wind up getting into a scuffle, and the guy starts swinging the knife as we pull out our gun and shoot him dead. He had no opportunity to hurt us, right? But then we knowingly walked across the street deliberately, giving him the opportunity. So then we get into a fight and we shoot him. We have no defense. Similarly, if the class bully says, you know, meet me after school behind the gym for a butt whooping, and after school we go behind the gym and we knowingly and willingly entered into a conflict with this guy, you have to think to yourself, what would a reasonable person have done? A reasonable person would not have crossed the street to get closer to the screaming maniac wielding a knife. A reasonable person would not have deliberately met the bully at a predetermined time and place to get into the fight. We had the option of not going, and so our standard, our standing as a legal defender is lost. You gave the opportunity. Rather than trying to stay out of the conflict, you gave the person the ability to get to you. You entered it willingly. Need all three. Otherwise, it looks like you, like it was a two-sided fight and you both wanted to fight. It wasn't just defense. Now let's move to the appropriate responses and the ladder analogy. And there are four rungs on the ladder, on the use of force ladder. And the further you climb up, the fewer options are available to you, and the more dangerous it becomes, just like climbing a real ladder. So, when you're using a ladder, where's the safest place to be? The safest place to be is on the ground and not even on the ladder at all. It's better to avoid physical confrontation than get mixed up in it. You know, using your awareness, and there's that word again, the word that I use every episode is awareness. So using your awareness, you should steer clear potential conflict and avoid the whole problem to begin with. And that's the safest place to be, is not in the situation to begin with. So, but rung rung on the ladder, you know, we're minding our own business and we have visual indicators. Now, this is someone giving you the evil eye, they're staring you down, there's someone suspicious, you know, walking down the street towards you, or there's a car slowing down in the street next to you. And so far, no laws have been broken. They have the legal right to drive down the street. They have the legal right to be on the sidewalk. They even have the legal right to give you the evil eye. Doesn't mean you can do anything. But your response should be confident demeanor. You don't want to respond. You don't want to show fear. If you show fear, then it could lead to further aggression. They could see that as a weakness in you, and it might spur them on to incite them to other things. So in rung two, things have escalated a little bit. So now we're at verbal indicators. It's gone just beyond looking at you. They're actually now talking to you or at you. For example, the person might be speaking very aggressively and saying, "What the hell are you looking at?" Or, you know, implying some threats towards you or your friends or your, you know, spouse or child. And this person's obviously trying to pick a fight with you or just wants to scare you off. So what should you do? Your response should be verbal deflection. Something along the lines of, "Hey, you know what? There's no problem here, man. I didn't mean to cause any offense." Your demeanor should remain confident and non-threatening. You're trying to avoid the conflict by deflecting his aggression. If you come off as afraid or cowering, it could escalate his response. And conversely, if you come off as too aggressive, it could be taken as a challenge and also escalate his response. You know, your goal here is to diffuse the situation. And, you know, every situation is different, and you might not know what the correct response is. Heck, there could not be any correct response at all. The guy could just be biding his time or using his excuse to get closer because he's always intended to try and hit you. And this is, you know, an example of why it's better just not to be in the ladder in the first place. Should things escalate to assault and battery, that's rung three. So assault and battery, and let's define those terms. Assault is the threat of a conflict. Something like saying, "I'm going to beat you up," or "I'm going to kick your teeth in." That would be assault. We're on rung three here. We're looking at there's been an assault, and you've got all the indicators, and you think you have all three of the prerequisites, or means, opportunity, and intent. Can you launch a preemptive strike at this point? He actually hasn't physically touched you. But if you have all three, means, opportunity, intent, yes, you can. However, again, if you're missing one, just one, you can't do it. So, for example, if someone calls you on the phone and says, "I'm going to beat the snot out of you," and you think, "Aha, I have him now," so you drive over to his house and you preemptively strike him in the nose, that would be wrong. He had the means, sure, he could have swung at you. He was pretty clear about his intent, but there was no immediate opportunity. You actually had to get in your car and drive over there. So there was no way for him to actually follow through on his verbal assault. So you wouldn't be able to do that at that point. So the second part of assault and battery is battery. Now, battery is the actual physical touching. It's an offensive touch. It's a shove. It's a sexual touch. It's a punch. It's a kick. And at rung three on assault and battery, we're looking at a threat of minor injury. And minor injury is something like a broken nose and scrapes and bruises. So what can you do at this point? You can respond with reasonable force, and it's sometimes called equal force. That means like fist to fists and kicks to kicks. Now, if you're a trained martial artist or you've had any sort of military combative training, you need to be careful. Your kick may not be the average man's kick. So just because he tried to kick you in the belly doesn't mean that you can unload a well-practiced and perfectly placed roundhouse kick to his temple and put him in a coma or induce traumatic brain injury. That would be considered excessive force, and what we need to respond with is reasonable or equal. It also doesn't mean that, you know, if somebody tries to punch you, that you can block it expertly and then take your finger and poke it through his eyeball to try and tickle his brain just because he punched you. Again, that would not be seen as a reasonable force, something that a reasonable or normal person would do. That would be excessive. So for rung 3, assault and battery, reasonable or equal force is the response. You are allowed to protect yourself, but just don't overdo it. Now, on rung 4 is when things are really, really nasty and ugly. This is the top rung of the ladder, and things are serious. And you must believe that you are going to be seriously injured, that you're at risk from losing a limb, an internal organ, an eye, somebody's trying to rape you, or even that they're going to kill you. So what's your response? At this point, you have the option of deadly force. Again, it's only an option. You don't have to do it, but you have the option of using deadly force. And this is also where we bring up weapons. As soon as you draw a weapon, you're at rung 4. You're at deadly force. A knife, a club, a gun, considered a felony assault, deadly force rung on the ladder. Weapons are considered deadly force items. So if somebody draws a weapon on you, you're at level 4. You're at rung 4. If you draw the weapon, you've automatically taken your response up to level 4. And to all this point, we've always been referring to the flat rungs, you know, even responses. And the question comes up, are you actually ever allowed to skip a rung in your response? Are you actually allowed to respond with a higher level than the one that you're being given? And under certain circumstances, yes, you are. But before we talk about when it would be appropriate, let's talk about when it would be inappropriate, when it would not be okay to respond with a higher rung. An example of this is if the guy is just mouthing off to you and he's saying, like, you're ugly and your mother dresses you funny, that's a rung 2 response. It would be inappropriate for you to hit him in the nose for it, which would be a rung 3 response. Not saying that he wouldn't deserve it, not saying that it wouldn't make you feel better, but it would get you into legal trouble. Just as it would be inappropriate to draw a knife at him, even just to scare him, because as soon as you draw the weapon, you're on rung 4, and he's only at rung 2. So in those cases, it would be inappropriate, it would be wrong to respond with a higher level. So when would it be appropriate to tilt the ladder a bit? It's appropriate when there is a disparity of force. Disparity of force. And that is when the defender is at a significant disadvantage to the assailant. Here are some examples of that. You have a man who's bound to a wheelchair, who is combating an able-bodied person, or a child against an adult, or one man against many men, or even just a woman against a man. Now again, there is never such thing as 100%, and the disparity of force argument might be tough to defend. Some are easy. You know, a child versus an adult, definitely disparity there. A woman against a man, definite disparity of force there. What about one against many? Well, how many does it make a disparity? 10? 10 on one? Yeah, pretty much, sure. How about 5? Probably still okay. Now, what about 3? Well, to someone who understands physical combat and understands that, you know, once you actually go over 2, it becomes very, very hard to defend yourself, and unless you're very lucky. But to the average person who's watched far too many Bruce Lee movies, who's, sees him take on 10 without even getting scratched, it might be harder to defend that. So one of the other things you have to remember is that conflicts may only last a minute or so, or even a few seconds, but the repercussions, the emotional and legal problems, can last for years. So, and there are also two things you have to look about legally. There's the potential criminal prosecution, and then there's the civil prosecution. Criminal means you have to deal with the police and judges and, you know, prison and jail sentences and fines and things like that. In civil, it's the family or the actual person himself who files suit against you and wants monetary compensation. You know, each one has their own rules. Each one has their own set of regulations and laws. You know, in the case of, like, for example, OJ was acquitted of criminal, but then had his butt handed to him in the civil. Same crime, two different legal systems, two different outcomes. The confrontation doesn't end with the physical aspect. It could happen and drag out for years. So understanding the use of force ladder can help steer you out of trouble and put you on better legal ground. And I really hope you never have to consider it, but if you do, I hope that and have an understanding of what an appropriate response would be and how to stay out of the trouble helps you out. In summary, we have number one. You know, it's best to avoid the conflict altogether. Just try and not be there. The second thing is that you need three key elements before you can physically defend yourself. The attacker needs to have the means or the ability to get to you. The attacker needs to have an opportunity to get to you. And the attacker needs to have the intent to harm you. The other things are that you need to know the responses based on the four rungs of the ladder. So for visual indicators, you respond with confident demeanor. For verbal indicators, you respond with verbal deflection. For assault and battery, you respond with reasonable force. For felony assault, you respond with an option of deadly force. And nothing's ever 100%, and you are legally responsible for your actions. If you have any commentary or corrections to this episode, or any episode actually, feel free to send me an email, and that address is podcast@alexhaddix.com, and I'd love to hear from you. Well, that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions and commentary, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe.
Kevin MacLeod.